Owing to its history as both a monument to Saddam's ego and a playground for the dictator and his minions, this particular location was known as the Water Palace, majestically constructed on the banks of the Tigris River, with swimming pools in several of the buildings on the compound. Saddam's palaces were undeniably breathtaking in both scope and beauty. Each building boasted unique handiwork in the walls and on the marble floors. The arches of the entryways were inlaid with gold in exquisite, intricate designs. Then there were the gigantic ceilings, stretching skyward, 25, 30, sometimes 40 feet above the palace floor. Saddam clearly had no reservations when it came to spending his country's money on himself, and one could not help but be both oddly impressed and overtly repulsed by the arrogance, or madness, required to fuel such selfishness. If a skeptic required proof that Saddam was siphoning off money from the United Nations and other sources, money intended for the Iraqi citizens, he needed to look no further than one of Saddam's palaces. The waste was staggering. The greed, nothing short of sickening. I had spent most of the previous year in Iraq, serving as commander of the 4th Infantry Division's 1-8 Infantry Battalion. And while there were many things about my experience that had left me confused and disenchanted, this much I knew for certain. The money Saddam burned on just one of these palaces could easily have provided food, shelter, and clothing for a large village of his people for years to come. Such thoughts and observations often filled me with sadness, and they stay with me now, even as the years melt away and the anger and hurt subside. When I look back on my time in Iraq, I feel a sense of pride at what we accomplished, sometimes against almost insurmountable odds, and at the professionalism and courage we brought to our jobs. I also feel sad, for any number of different reasons. I'm sad for the men and women who have lost their lives over there, for the soldiers who have been wounded, and for the families whose lives have been destroyed back home. I'm sad for the marriages that have been broken under the stress of separation. I'm sad for the Iraqi people and for the children who became casualties of war. I'm also sad for the American military, to which I gave 20 years of my life, primarily because I think we made serious mistakes in Iraq, strategic and philosophical mistakes at the highest levels of military and political command, the effects of which trickle down inevitably and tragically to the battlefield, resulting in casualties and the failure to accomplish a mission and complete what should have been an overwhelming victory. I discovered too late that we were not really a nation at war in Iraq. Too often, in fact, we weren't even an army at war. We were a handful of battalions at war, led by an even smaller group of officers, and I include myself here, silly and naive enough to think that winning was a legitimate option, or that it mattered in the least. The important thing, as it turned out, was not winning or losing, but simply putting the best face possible on something that is, by definition, unpleasant: war. There were countless days when it seemed as though I had tumbled down the rabbit hole, and not merely because of the inherent lunacy and inhumanity of combat. What I found most bothersome and frustrating were the days when there seemed to be no coherent objective, when all that really mattered was whether we were winning the propaganda war. And by the way, we lost that one too. Whether we were delivering money to a local hospital or clinic, or handing out soccer balls to wide-eyed Iraqi schoolchildren, as long as we looked generous and efficient on a daytime patrol, it meant that all was right with the world. Looking good was tantamount to doing good. But that was all very much surface stuff, winning hearts and minds and that sort of thing. It had little or nothing to do with the root of the mission, or at least the mission as I saw it. The real mission was this: secure and stabilize the region. Almost comical in its simplicity and abstraction, this directive, as we soon discovered, actually involved a great deal of complicated, messy, and dangerous work. It involved the risking of our own lives and the taking of others. It involved the primal and bloody toil of combat, an experience that forever changes and scars anyone who has been through it.